We're right down the line here. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3391. Kristen, or excuse me, Teresa?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3391 requires the Commissioner of Bureau and Labor Industries to adopt rules relating to the safe transportation of workers and the inspection of vehicles that are used by farm labor contractors to transport workers. The measure also requires a farm labor contractor license applicant and a farm labor contractor to provide satisfactory proof that a vehicle that is used to transport workers is in safe operating condition. And there's an emergency clause in the measure effective on passage.
Thank you. Mr. Dale, identify yourself for the record and go to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Michael Dale from the Northwest Worker Justice Project. The principal idea behind this bill is that one of the high causes of injuries and fatalities in agriculture and reforestation is vehicle transportation. And according to the OSHA website, approximately 25% of the fatal injuries in Oregon in 2005 were in forestry and agriculture, and about 25% of the injuries overall were from motor vehicle accidents. Now, they don't cross-tabulate at that, so I can't tell you how many exactly were from that. I see you perhaps looking for testimony. I have testimony. It's on the way that will...
No, no, I'm not. I'm okay. Just filing all this stuff away in an appropriate file, and I'll be done in a minute, and you'll have my full attention.
Okay, I should have testimony in this bill that's available in just a few minutes. The basic idea of this bill is that under current law, the Commissioner of Labor has authority to regulate farm labor contractors and reforestation contractors with respect to wages and conditions and some other things, safety of housing, field sanitation. But the only authority that the commissioner explicitly has to regulate transportation is to require insurance. This bill would give the Commissioner of Labor authority to regulate transportation as well as a matter of licensing. Now, the bill as drafted basically proposed that the commissioner would promulgate rules governing safe operation of motor vehicles in transporting workers in ag and in transportation. We had some discussions with the relevant agencies. Three principal concerns came out. The ODOT was mentioned in it. They feel that this bill is just beyond their capacity and authority, and to a certain extent even expertise, and don't understand why they're in the bill at all. I've drafted an amendment which has not been to Legislative Council but has been reviewed by the three agencies and will be submitted to you. I apologize that it's not here already, but it will be submitted to you in the next few minutes. That basically removes them from the bill altogether. The second concern was expressed by OROSHA, who felt that it could lead, if the commissioner was promulgating health and safety regulations about safe transportation and employment, it could lead to conflicts in the law and double regulation between the two agencies, since they are the authorized organ agency to regulate occupational health and safety in the workplace. And by the same token, the folks at the Bureau of Labor were feeling a little bit like this is really OSHA's bailiwick and their expertise and not ours. And so the drafted amendments will shift authority for the substantive safety rulemaking to OSHA rather than the Bureau of Labor. And then finally, the Bureau of Labor will adopt regulations requiring some showing of the safe operation of vehicles and requiring farm labor contractors to comply with the OSHA rules, and it's important that it's to comply with the OSHA rules when the people are employed. Oftentimes, people are transported by farm labor contractors when they're not technically employees under OSHA law, and so they would be required to comply with substantive standards by BOLI rules if they're being transported for agriculture reforestation, even if they weren't technically employees, as a matter of Farm Labor Contractor licensing law. Then the final thing is that, as originally envisioned, the idea was it would require a pre-inspection of motor vehicles. We went round and round about how best to do that. The answers weren't clear and apparent, and yet the bill seemed to require that. And so the bill is redrafted in a way that it would permit but not require the Commissioner of Labor to require pre-inspection. And then basically in the rulemaking, Commissioner Gardner can figure out whether it's worth it in terms of a cost question and what the best way of assuring that the vehicles are safe would be. The three agencies involved have seen the amendment, and as I understand it, they're agreeable to the redrafted language. I think they're all here and they can speak for themselves. And given that we have many bills and much to cover, I'll leave it there unless there are questions from the committee.
By 10 o'clock, sir. Today's your day. So.
I understand. That's why I move along.
Any questions right now on Mr. Dale on this bill? All right. Thank you, sir. I'd like to call Troy from ODOT. I'm sorry I can't read your last name. And Christy Hamming, please. I apologize, Troy, for not being able to read your name. I'm confident you'll fill me in a minute. Christy, if you're ready, go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you. Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, my name is Christine Hammond. I'm the administrator of the Wage and Hour Division of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. We appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning with regard to House Bill 3391, which we support. It would require, as currently drafted, BOLI to adopt rules relating to the safe transportation of workers by farm labor contractors. We license farm and forest labor contractors and would be in a position to require some sort of evidence by contractors that the vehicles they use to transport workers are safe. And as Michael Dale indicated, we've been in several discussions with him or OSHA and ODOT about the best way to do that. I'm not sure we came to a consensus. One of the problems, as Mr. Dale indicated, is a resource issue. We're not really in the position of being able to inspect vehicles ourselves. And you probably know that mechanics are not required to be certified or licensed in this state, so we didn't have an easy method to require contractors to go to a licensed mechanic because they're not required to be licensed. In any event, we did agree to adopt rules that would regulate farm labor contractors in the area of safe vehicles and work with OSHA to require farm labor contractors to comply with OSHA regulations in that regard. And I did review the amendment drafted by Mr. Dale, and it does accomplish that, in that it does no longer require BOLI to inspect the vehicles as a condition of licensing. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Sir, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chair Holby, Ms. Van Winkle. I'm Troy Costales, Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. As been mentioned previously, ODOT is mentioned in this bill in two roles, one in consultation in the creation of the rules, and then secondly under an interagency agreement for enforcement. And that's the part where there's a mishit with what the responsibilities for ODOT would be. It would be on the enforcement side. We do deal with worker transport rules under current statute, under 820.010, and in publishing the rules of worker transport, if there's any time that there's enforcement involved, we basically are working with local law enforcement to do that. ODOT does not have strict enforcement ability on our own. We have to go with local law enforcement to do that. So therefore, as far as the original language of the bill is why we were asking for the department to be removed out of there, because that is not our role or function on the enforcement side for this type of vehicle on Oregon's roads and streets. And in addition, if there was further work on this bill, the remnant under 820.010 in statute of ODOT being involved in worker transport seems to be bound in history of time past, and the fact that we don't have that responsibility anymore from quite a long time ago, the question is whether or not we should be removed in that second piece of statute as well, because all we're right now doing is publishing a set of rules. I'm more than happy to be involved in the program from a consultant point of view and talk about what's safe and what type of vehicles or standards might be out on the roads and streets of Oregon, because our goal is to reduce death and injury, but not on the enforcement side of this particular program. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. I'd like to call Ramon Ramirez and Joe Pozos. I hope the second gentleman, I apologize for pronouncing your name wrong if I did. Please set me straight on the pronunciation of that, if you would, please. Pardon me?
Pozos.
Pozos. Thank you very much, Ramon. And whenever you gentlemen are ready.
Mi nombre es Leo Vallejo y vengo a leer el testimonio de Joe Pozos.
My name is Leo Vallejos. He's going to read the testimony from Joe Pozos.
Mi nombre es Joe Pozos. Soy padre de cuatro hijos y he trabajado en el campo por más de 30 años en Oregon.
My name is Joe Pozos. I am the father of four and I've worked in farm labor for over 30 years in Oregon.
Yo vengo a testificar en apoyo de HB 3391, que requiere que los contratistas registren sus vehículos cuando transportan a trabajadores al campo. La mayor parte de los trabajadores tienen que pagar transporte a los raiteros y contratistas para conseguir un trabajo.
I've come to testify in favor of HB 3391, which requires contractors to have safe vehicles when transporting workers. The vast majority of workers pay for their rides to and from work to the contractor as a condition of getting a job.
Muchos de los vehículos que transportan a la gente están en malas condiciones y no deben transportar gente porque no cuentan con llantas ni frenos buenos y hasta quitan los asientos para acomodar bancos sin cinturones. En muchos de los vehículos meten hasta 15 o 20 personas, cobrando a cada persona entre $2 a $5 diariamente.
Many of the vehicles used to transport workers are in bad condition, some with bad brakes and tires. Seats are taken out to accommodate benches without seat belts. In many cases, up to 15 or 20 workers are put in each vehicle, and workers are charged $2 to $5 per individual every day.
En mi caso, estuve en un vehículo en malas condiciones y chocó, causando la muerte de un campesino y 12 de nosotros lastimados gravemente. Es por eso que estoy apoyando la medida HB 3391, porque ya es tiempo de que el Estado de Oregon ponga atención a este asunto, si no esto continuará causando más accidentes.
In my case right here in Oregon, I was in one of these vehicles which was in bad condition and crashed, killing one person and injuring 12 people, including myself. For this reason, I am supporting HB 3391 because it's time that the state of Oregon does something to change this.
Gracias por su apoyo para los campesinos y por favor aprueben la propuesta HB 3391.
Thanks for your support, and please approve HB 3391.
Gracias, señor. Muchas gracias. Ramon?
Chair Choffler and Vice Chair Hovey, thank you for allowing me to testify today. For the record, my name is Ramon Ramirez. I'm president of the Oregon Farm Worker Union, PECUN. And on behalf of our membership, we are in strong support of HB 3391. Has Michael testified and has... in the testimony of Hope also, you'll see that, you know, agriculture is a very dangerous industry and many farm workers, you know, suffer injuries. And one of the many unknown injuries that happen is transportation, happens during, you know, transportation to and from work. And I can tell you that much of the work that's being done in agriculture today in the Willamette Valley, or throughout the state of Oregon for that matter, is done by labor contractors who use vehicles. We have a large migratory force, so those vehicles are even, they transport workers from other parts of the country to the state of Oregon, and many of these vehicles are unfit for transportation purposes. Like Hope testified, many of them, they take out the seats of these vehicles, because you got to remember, this is a business, right? Transportation to and from work is a business. Many of the farm workers has a condition for getting a job at that particular, with that particular farm labor contractor. The condition is that they have to get a ride with that contractor. So the contractor, in addition to making wages or making money from the workers' hard earnings, they also charge transportation costs. So if you want to work with that particular person, you have to pay. And workers pay from anywhere from $2 to $5 a day, and this is day in, day out, every time they go to and from the work site. And so it's not unusual, and during the summertime in here in the valley, that you see, you know, vans full of people, you know, 10, 15, 20 people in a vehicle. And these vehicles are crash a lot of times. I was a witness. We had a crew that that was involved in a major accident on the intersection of 214 and 99 this summer. It happened to be a family, but they were all crammed in. They were all cramped in a van, you know. And one of the major reasons why there were so many injuries in that particular accident, which almost led to the death of a woman, was because they didn't have any seatbelts. The vehicle didn't have any seatbelts, because it's not unusual to take out the seats and put benches so that they could fit more people and make more money. That's the whole, I think that's the idea behind this bill, is that we want to stop that practice. To me, this is a no-brainer. I mean, this is sound public policy. I've heard testimony from Oregon OSHA and from ODOT talking about, you know, while we don't know whether we can do this or not, you know, it's not a question of whether, you know, it's whether they have the capacity to do it. What's at stake here is the moral responsibility of the state of Oregon to provide, you know, health and safety to the people that put food on our table. So to me, it's important that we pass this piece of legislation, because it's the right thing to do. Right, we want to avoid not only accidents among farm workers, but the general public. Right, and so we send a strong message to those farm labor contractors as we start, you know, getting folks in line by saying, you know, you need to do the right thing. You need to treat your workers with respect and dignity, and this is a step forward in that direction. So I encourage, I have testimony and I have other documentation, but I encourage the committee to approve this this bill and pass it out of committee with a yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. First thing I want to say is I'm no stranger to farm work, and anybody that's done it for 30 years got my undying respect. Can you share that with them? ¿Sí? ¿Comprende, amigo?
Dice que él respeta a cualquier persona que tiene más de 30 años de trabajo,
yeah.
Porque él sabe.
So, thank you, Ramon. Okay. Secondly, we have a whole bunch of laws already about seatbelts in this state. We also have a bunch of laws, like the transportation taxis, for example, shuttles to the airport. I'm confident there are already existing laws. And this is the one bill out of all of these that most picked my interest. If nothing else, I'm certainly going to follow up on this, and I think what we have is a lack of enforcement. And that costs money, and I'm all for putting more enforcement out there. So I just wanted to share that with you, too. Any questions? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I also want to encourage you. I want to invite you, you know, as soon as the crops start getting picked, to come out and do a visit of you know, the farms. And I want to extend that invitation to you, Vice Chair Hovey, to come and visit Oregon Agriculture, visit the farm workers, have a dialogue, visit the labor camps, and see these conditions that I'm talking about. Actually go into a van and sit in that van, you know, where you see benches of rows of benches in those vehicles. I think you have a you get a better idea of what we're talking about.
And Ramon, with it, we've talked about this for a couple of years now, and that visit's long overdue. And you're right. And I certainly want, I'm going to take you up on your invitation. And the best time for me is morning. I don't, can't speak for anybody else, or until after the session's over. Representative Holy.
Oh, I was going to say best time for me is morning too. So probably for us, it's going to have to be after session
at this point.
But follow up with us. I'd be happy to come out and take a look at what you're talking about.
Definitely.
I didn't know it was legal to take seats out of a vehicle and put benches in to start with. So
I don't think it is. So, but I appreciate it. Any more? Anything else? Before I got a long list of other folks.
Okay.
Thank
you
very much. I'm going to call. Forgive me if I mispronounce these names. Please correct me when you get on up here. Nargis Shadba, Eliazar Velasco, and Stephen Witt.
Witty.
Oh, forgive me.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready, whoever wants to go first.
Good morning. I'm here in support of House Bill 3391. My name is Nargis Shadby, and I'm the director of the farm worker program at the Oregon Law Center. For over 20 years, I have represented farm workers and forestry workers in employment-related issues. As others have mentioned, a huge part of the risk and exposure that workers face with regard to hazardous conditions in ag and forestry occurs not necessarily in the field, but in to and from work. In those pre-dawn hours when the workers are loaded in vans, over capacity, and in the rush to get back home at dusk from remote locations. I want to emphasize one thing before the committee, and that is the issue of control exercised by labor contractors in the state. The reality is that the workers do not have information from labor contractors, despite what the law says, regarding where they're going to work week to week or even for the very next day. They're completely dependent on the labor contractors to get to and from site. Aside from the question of the charges, I want the committee to appreciate the fact that it's not a matter of choice for the workers. In order to show up for work, in order to receive the employment, they rely on the contractors. They are completely dependent on the contractors for that information. And that's a critical piece. It's not that they can use public transportation, and they are discouraged from bringing their own vehicles, even if they had one. That's true in forestry, and it's also true in many sectors of ag as well. It's therefore critical for our state to take a close look at what are the standards that are currently available and enforced with regard to forestry and ag workers when it comes to transportation. And it's we're compelled to improve those standards for the workers. I also wanted to touch briefly on there are federal provisions covering transportation of the workers. The issue here is that the state of Oregon has little enforcement of those of the provisions, because there's not one that's targeted to labor contractors that's clear right now under the licensing provisions. And this bill, with rulemaking, I assume, would go a long way toward that. Labor contractors in the state have to pass a test. They get information in Spanish, in English, that they have to study and pass the test. The provisions here, if rules are made, could address that issue. And the contractors who are responsible for transportation of workers would learn about the provision, be reminded of the provision, and be accountable when they are not following those provisions. That would go a long way in improving conditions for the workers. I want to ask another witness to talk about the conditions that one of his relatives faced when they were involved in an accident a couple of years ago on the way to work in forestry. And Enrique Santos from our office will translate.
Buenos días, señores, señoras.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Yo estoy aquí para compartir este accidente que pasó hace 2 años.
I'm here to share with you what happened in that accident that occurred 2 years ago.
Señor, he has to identify himself for the record, please.
Esta identificación estoy para que puedan poner nueva su nombre.
Mi nombre es Eleazar Velasco.
My name is Eleazar Velasco.
Y estoy aquí para poder dar este testimonio sobre el accidente que estuvo envuelto mi hermano, Salomón Velasco.
So I can give you some testimony on what happened to my brother, Salomón Velasco.
Donde desgraciadamente perdieron la vida 2 personas.
Where unfortunately 2 people lost their lives.
Donde mi hermano quedó muy afectado sobre ese accidente.
My brother was really affected by that accident.
Ese accidente se hubiera podido evitar.
That accident could have been avoided.
Porque tanto yo como él hemos trabajado por muchos años en la sierra.
Both of us worked in the forest for many, many years.
Y de ese tiempo cuando yo trabajé en la sierra ahorita no ha cambiado nada.
And since the time that I was working in the forest to right now, nothing has changed.
Yo platicaba con él y me decía que los benes estaban en muy malas condiciones, no tenían los suficientes cinturones de seguridad.
When we were talking about work, he would continue to tell me that still the vehicles that we were being transported on didn't have enough security. They weren't secure vehicles, they didn't have seat belts.
Muchas veces iban muchas personas en la ven que iban sentados en los pasillos.
And continued many people overcrowded vehicles with some of the workers still sitting on the floor.
Y es muy doloroso todo esto que pasó. Desgraciadamente murieron personas en el trabajo o rumbo al trabajo.
This is very painful to have these people die either at work or en route to work.
Era amigo y compañero de trabajo, el señor Leobardo, y un muchacho de 19 años apenas.
Leobardo was a friend and a co-worker, as well as a young 19-year-old new worker.
Y mi hermano quedó muy afectado de ese accidente. Yo ahorita lo he perdido físicamente porque él se desaparece.
This has been very painful and it affected us tremendously because my brother now, he just disappears for periods of time.
Él no viene a la casa a practicar con nosotros como nos reuníamos cada fin de semana.
We used to have gatherings, family gatherings every weekend. Now he seldom comes, if ever.
Él se perdió en él mismo. Me yes. Dice que platica o que el difunto Leobardo se le aparece en la noche cuando va a dormir.
He's lost within himself. He tells me that the deceased Leobardo appears before him when he goes to sleep.
Lo mira por todos lados, le hablan, y él no está a gusto. Él está ahorita un momento, él se va por otro lado, anda por todos lados.
He's just very uncomfortable. He can't stay still in one place because both of the deceased reveal themselves to him and they talk to him.
Tanto le afectó que hay personas que me han hablado que vaya a recoger su cheque donde trabajó 2 días, en otro lado otro día, que porque ni eso se acuerda.
He's been so affected that I get calls from friends saying, your brother didn't pick up his check over here. Or I get a call from over there that he didn't go get his money over there. He's just lost.
Yo de todo corazón quisiera pedirles que hicieran algo por esto para que no pueda ocurrir más.
From the bottom of my heart, I would like to ask you that you do something so that this never happens again.
Si yo me duele todo esto que pasó, imagínense las personas que perdieron a sus esposos, a sus papás, que ahorita no están para ayudarlos, para soportarlos.
Imagine our suffering and that of the suffering of the people who actually lost their loved ones.
Yo quisiera pedirles que si ustedes pudieran hacer algo para que no vuelva a ocurrir esto, de todo corazón les digo que nosotros se lo vamos a agradecer. Estamos aquí para trabajar, para soportar nuestra familia, pero ayúdenos a que estos accidentes no vuelvan a ocurrir, que se puedan evitar, que haya alguien que pueda inspeccionar estos vehículos donde no puedan haber más accidentes.
We beg you from the bottom of our heart that you do something to stop this. we beg you to take into consideration what I've said and approve this law so that this kind of situations do not continue to happen.
Gracias por escucharme.
Thank you for listening to me.
It's my pleasure. You were to testify, sir? Muchas gracias, amigos. I'm sorry about all that.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Stephen Witte. I'm the Northwest Director for the United Farm Workers Union Pacific Northwest Region.
Miss, if you want to stay, I was going to open to questions as soon as you want to stay.
And I'm here in support of HB 3391. Certainly, the stories you've heard already, and you know, just for example, last week I was in Eastern Oregon and saw what's normally considered a 12-passenger van loaded with, I would guess, easily 20 or more people, leaving one of the labor camps in the Boardman area. So, I mean, and this is certainly not a problem that's unique to Oregon. Certainly, the United Farm Workers have seen it in many places in the United States. And many other states have, has worked to remedy and rectify the situation. You know, many of them had the same concerns that it's being presented here as far as the different department agencies and so forth. I would, you know, call to your attention just a couple of things. For example, Washington State, which has had had a similar law on the books for, I believe, 4 years, is currently discussing ways to putting additional teeth into that law this session in Olympia. And California has had a law which is probably one of the toughest in the country since 2002. So I think that, you know, just the absence of such legislation in Oregon is kind of a glaring omission, if anything. So, and it boils down to just, you know, civil society has the responsibility to remain vigilant concerning the health and safety of all people. And certainly, you know, the most vulnerable in our midst, folks that don't understand. Often, you know, due to language difficulties, certain rules and regulations, and I think we have a special responsibility to protect these folks, particularly these folks that work so hard in our food industry. I mean, right now in Eastern Oregon, you see these vans going out to asparagus fields, and you'll just see these vans packed to the gills. You know, people are sitting on the floor. They're sitting practically in each other's laps, and it's a disaster waiting to happen. You know, it's very simple. So, you know, like I said, we could regale you with stories of accidents and deaths and dismemberments and so forth in many parts of the country. I think it's a matter of the fact that Oregon does not have this type of legislation. I think it's one that, you know, it's not gonna be the be all and end all in and of itself, but I think it certainly is a step in the right direction. And so I would urge that you pass HB 3391 out of committee.
Thank you. And before I open the questions, I'm going to follow up with the state police and ODOT and DMV. I will be surprised to find out if someone were transporting 15, 20 people in a van and the seats and seatbelts were moved out and a state police officer pulled them over, that I would be willing to bet a good amount of money is already illegal and they would not be able to go down the road. So I first of all, what we need to do first, I think, is at least try to enforce what we already have. And at the minimum, Representative Holt, you have a question?
Well, maybe not a question, Mr. Chair. Just, I agree with you. I think that this is already illegal, but evidently we don't have the enforcement out on the roads to really do anything about it. I think it might be one of our problems. But it also comes to my mind. This touches so many different agencies, I assume, and it's really, you know, I think this committee needs to think about this either in the interim if we don't get this totally solved with this bill by itself, but seems to me that, the people that are hiring these contractors ought to have some sort of conscience or liability in seeing what's going on. It's like I don't know if these are state forestries or the U.S. Forest Department or whatever that are hiring these contractors or the or the particular farm industry that's hiring these contractors have to be well aware of how these workers are showing up on their job site, because they're usually there overseeing their particular projects. And for them to turn a blind eye to this, I think, is somewhat negligent on their part, whether it's the State Department of Forestry, U.S. Department of Forestry, or a particular farmer. I think there should be some accountability with those folks too, because they're supervising their operations as such. And just as a general contractor has liability with subcontractors, I think there should be some accountability in that regard too. And I don't see this in this particular bill, but I think it's something we should
And I, you know, I certainly would concur with what you said, Representative Holvey. But, you know, just for example, just last week I was crossing the bridge from Washington back into Oregon at Hermiston. And on the Washington side of the bridge, there was, and I don't know if it was State Patrol or if it was, you know, county police. I don't recall. But they did have, you know, two vans pulled over for just, you know, just that purpose. So, you know, I mean, I really do think that, you know, like I said, this is a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, and I've already read about it in the paper. One more comment, and then we're going to move on, because we are running out of time.
The beauty of this bill is that it brings together the two critical agencies that have central role in enforcement of protective provisions for farm and forestry workers in Oregon. Labor contractors are regulated in this state. What is left out is with regard to transportation of workers. This is what this bill can address, and currently it's not addressed. There are a number of other agencies who are in part responsible or touch this, but because this bill brings together OROSHA, basically, and Bureau of Labor to address this issue, I think that's why this would be successful way of handling this. And like I said, the licensing and increase in knowledge in the among farm worker and labor contractors with regard to these issues is critical, and that's what the missing piece is. There are two or three inspectors as far as the Department of Labor statewide. There are not many more in Oregon with regard to these other agencies. It would increase the number, but it would also allow the workers to bring claims to address some of the issues as well. And that's a critical piece. Thank you.
I appreciate your testimony, and I am going to follow up on this. I really do appreciate it. I'm confident Representative Holby will join me. Mr. Wood, would you like to come up and clarify something, please?
Thank you, Chair Schaffler, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Wood, and I'm the administrator of the Occupational Safety and Health Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, known as Oregon OSHA. I simply wanted to make sure that something was clear on the record. One of the previous witnesses misspoke, I think, and indicated that Oregon OSHA had said that we couldn't do this. If you look at the amendments that have been drafted, they actually reflect our concern that the rulemaking authority in the original bill related to safe transportation was being directed at Boley, and it was our position that that responsibility belongs in Oregon OSHA, and we can and will pursue that responsibility if the bill passes. I'd also be open to answer any questions you might have.
Well, I would like you, Mr. Wood, to go back to your department and share this with everyone else that, you know, I think we have laws you have to have a seatbelt on in the state of Oregon, and I do not think you can legally take out or remove manufactured seats and put in wooden benches and pile people in on the floor and transport them for a business. I'm going to be amazed if that's not
Chair Schaffler, true. You are correct. The seatbelt law certainly applies, as does the provision that you can't remove the seatbelts and then replace them with benches or some other occupancy. And in fact, we, although those aren't our rules, but we are able to enforce the transportation rules, we would enforce those as violations where we found them. The issue for us in any of this enforcement becomes finding them. We don't obviously have the ability to pull vehicles over as they're moving down the highways. That's one of the limitations on our enforcement ability. There also are issues related at times to jurisdiction in terms of our enforcement ability that the transport, at least arguably, may be occurring before an employer-employee relationship is established.
Well, I'm going to go to the police officers, the sheriffs, and the state police and ask them to keep an eye out for this at a minimum. I know, and you know what? It don't matter what law you make about anything. There's going to be some idiot out there that's going to break it. But I think we could probably do a little better job of enforcing these. Representative Holby, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on a notion. I'd just like to ask a question about who's responsible, you know, in OSHA's eyes when something's happening in a particular operation. Do you have jurisdiction over OSHA rules on national forest lands, for example? And if this operation was being carried out by a subcontractor, does the owner or the governing body of either public or private property where the operations are being conducted have any liability in OSHA's, I guess, purview, maybe not liability, but do they have any responsibility under OSHA laws to make sure these operations that are being carried on for their projects are being done according to the law?
Chair Schaffler, Representative Holley, for the first question first. With regard to jurisdiction in the National Forest, we do have jurisdiction over private contractors working in the National Forest, as well as state employees or local employees. We do not obviously have jurisdiction over federal employees. With regard to your second question about the responsibility of a higher tier entity, that really becomes a case-specific determination. We do at times in construction look at multi-employer sites, and this oversimplifies a fairly extensive body of case law and discussion, but primarily the issue we would be looking at that point would be control. And if the host employer were exercising control over the transport and the way the transportation was occurring, then we would be able to hold them responsible under the Occupational Safety and Health Act. To the extent they are not exercising that control, it would be difficult for us to do so.
Well, anything else, Representative? Thank you, Mr. Wood. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3391. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3392.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3392 requires day labor service agencies to register with the Commissioner of the Bureau of Labor Industries. It also requires a day labor employer to provide information about the work, employer, and wages to day laborers, and also establishes mechanisms and requirements that day labor employers must provide and disclose to workers.
Thank you. Mr. Dale and Ignacio Paramo. I hope I said that right. Ignacio Paramo here. Mr. Dale, let's get going.
He's here.
Sir, you have 63 minutes to go through your bills. So I apologize, but we are running out of time.
Mr. Chair, I greatly appreciate your willingness to hear these bills and to try to get through them as quickly as possible. I do have written testimony. I won't augment that except simply to say that day labor right now is the Wild West, and there's very little regulation. We have clients all the time who are picked up by a guy named Sabas in a red truck, and don't know who they work for, don't get paid, get dropped off someplace, do the work all day, nobody comes and picks them up, the rates change and so forth, and you'll hear from other people about that. The nature of the bill is simply to, along the model of the Farm Labor Contractor Registration Act, to require day labor agencies to register with BOLI and to provide written statements of terms and conditions of employment. It bans some practice like transporting somebody out to a job site and not transporting them back, or calling them to work and then not giving them work, some things like that. It's in the written testimony. In the interest of being able to hear the citizen witnesses, I'm going to rest on that unless you have particular questions.
No, I don't. Sir, go ahead.
I am an interpreter.
That's good.
This
good.
Is not Ignacio.
Please, ma'am.
I'm sorry.
Oh, excuse me.
This is not Ignacio. This is...
Ignacio.
If he needs, if this gentleman wants to testify, he's welcome to.
He's signed up to testify. He's Mr. Pringiando.
He's not. But he's not. Okay. Go ahead and, ma'am, are you going to interpret it? Okay. Come on up, ma'am. Come on up.
Thanks.
And we'll get you next, sir.
Okay.
Okay. No, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. So whenever Ignacio is ready.
Thank you.
If you can do it, just do it in English.
I think I just want to read it in English.
Okay. So the witness wants to read his own statement in English.
That's fine. I mean, he needs to identify himself for the record.
Yes, necesitas identificarte para el acto.
My name is Ignacio Páramo. I am an organizer with Voice Workers' Right Education Project in Portland, Oregon. Voice is a small non-profit organization that works with recent immigrants, focusing on day laborers in the Portland metro area. The mission of the organization is to secure and protect immigrant worker rights through education, leadership development, and community organizing. I have been working for this organization for about 3 years as an organizer in the corners in Southeast Portland. This population suffer all kind of abuses, and one of the most common abuse on the corners is the unpaid wages from abusive employers. The number of open cases of unpaid wages in 2005 was 58, and in 2006 there were 33 more cases. We know that there are a large number of cases that day laborers do not report because they are afraid to talk. There are cases from $100 and cases for a few hundred dollars. Many times it's difficult to recover wages for day laborers because it is a long process and they have dropping out the cases many times. We have all kind of abuses, but I would like to mention one particularly that happens to a group of day laborers recently. About 3 months ago, an employer came to the corners to pick up 3 day laborers to do a moving job from Portland, Oregon to Eugene area. One day labor was from Mexico City, another one from Zacatecas, and the third from Oaxaca, Mexico. The 3 day laborers went to do the moving, and after they finished with this job, the employer offered them to drink a few beers. After they drank a few beers, the employer refused to pay them their money that they earned for the job. The day laborers started to demand their payment, and this conflict escalated to an ugly argument between one day laborer and between one of the day laborers and the employer. Then the employer pulled out a gun and shot the day laborer and killed him. The police arrived and detained the other 2 day laborers and the employer. Later, the 2 day laborers were deported to Mexico, and the employer was released because he claimed it was self-defense. Now we've been seeing more violent incidents or racist actions against day laborers, and we believe it is necessary to stop these kind of abuses and crimes before they escalate to a worse situation in Portland. We need your help to implement the labor laws or to create more effective laws to protect workers' rights. Thank you.
Mr. Bramo also gathered some testimonies from three people that he works with on the corner. Ivan Rivera will translate.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear.
I can't hear a thing.
Yes. Sure.
In the meantime, sir, would you like to get up and testify, sir? Does this gentleman need an interpreter, too?
He does,
but it's on a different bill.
Oh, forgive me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I am a day laborer at the corners. I worked almost a week.
Mr. Dale, you want to get out of your chair and let her sit?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. My name is Santos. I work at the corners. I work daily over there. I worked there for almost a week. But in total, he hired me to do this job. We had to work wet steel construction. This job took a long, long time. And for me, I feel that this treatment is unjustified. I spent a lot of time on the job. He told me that I was very slow at work. And I don't know how many steel pieces I had to work with. He was not satisfied with my work. And I told him, pay me. And he answered, I don't pay to those people who drop the job. I don't pay to those who leave. And I told them, I didn't come here to ask for your job. You hired me. Are you saying that I am not good for doing your work? Is this the problem? Then I leave. And he said, no, I'm not going to pay. And so far, I haven't received the payment. My name is Acuna Rodriguez. I have to say, we went to the office. They had been supporting us. We work with the VOS program. I work for a company. There's several jobs that were to be done. It ended up that this man called us to do a concrete job back in June. And this man would take me to all those jobs, leave me there alone to do the work. And we had to do several kitchens. Every weekend, he would take us there. We were doing the job. Then we would take us to do other kinds of jobs, different. And then he took me all the way to San Francisco, California. And still, he still owes me money. It's an amount of about several hundreds of dollars. And I came here. They've been supporting us all the time. They work with the day laborers. And they said that they were going to help me, but later on, I need to furnish proof. I have to gather things. I have to take letters from the people that saw me working. And it's been almost over half a year that we've been trying to do this. I am outside. He's looking at me. So this is the reason why I have to go several times, do moves. Oh, I'm sorry. I think this is an abuse of the people. And it shouldn't be that people abuse us in such a way. And they're living like kings. And in comparison to the way that we live, this is not fair. My name is, and it's... there's a national of Tonga, the Republic of Tonga. He hired me when the day ended. He told us come back the next day. He arrived in the morning. He told us, I'm going to come back and pay you. But he never came back. This person, it's from the Republic of Tonga, but he lives here and works here in Portland. And he owes not only one person, he owes a lot of money to a lot of people. We must have a way to recover our monies. And I want to approach all the legislators, representatives, and the governor of Oregon, so that there is a solution to this. Also, so that there is some support for the laborers over there in the corners.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias. Okay. Duke Shepherd. Thank you. Muchas gracias, amigo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Duke Shepherd, AFL-CIO. I'll be very brief and just say that Michael Dayoff said the Wild Wild West. It was funny because we hadn't talked before the hearing. I was going to say some of these bills are a chance to bring a little order to some chaos. And if not address the underground economy, then the under-table economy. Now, I don't know what's doable and what's... I'm honestly just not familiar enough with a lot of these issues in terms of the research that I've done. But sort of the unspoken subtext that I will kind of throw out there is that there's a whole lot of energy in this building and in a political environment around immigration. And you can't really get at the immigration issue without talking about demand. And demand and the exploitation of workers, that's really the most... I think, in our view, the most effective way to talk about the solutions on some of the immigration issues that come up. So these bills, I think, represent an opportunity to take a hard look at the demand side of the immigration debate and maybe come to some steps towards solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Duke. And you know what? You're exactly right. This is part of an incredibly broad conversation. This country, the United States, needs to somehow... First of all, harden our border, get our Mexican neighbors to do more for their own people, set up a process where people that are exploited by anybody in labor are punished for it. The vast majority of employers, I'm confident, are good employers. I'm not interested in penalizing them. And we also need to figure out some process. I don't know if there's 10 or 20 million undocumented. I don't know if any of these folks are documented or not. It doesn't matter. But those that anyone who works should get paid. But those that are here already, that are already working here, that have children here, that own houses here, we need to figure out a process to get them a visa, a green card, and on their way to citizenship. And that's what I just said is a huge mouthful. And I'll probably get beat up by some people and praised by others. But in the end, that's what we're going to have to do. My great-grandfather, this is family lore, so it's anecdotal, an Irishman stowed away on a boat when he was 12 years old from Ireland alone because they were starving to death. Now, my daughter's 13. I can't imagine her doing this. Got off the boat, and somebody handed him a shovel when he went to work. But so I am a descendant of an undocumented worker. I am. So somehow we're going to have to do that. But and what I see here repeatedly is exploitation, people put in harm's way, and incredible violations of our existing laws we already have on the books. And this community is going to have this conversation eventually. And hopefully we'll have it before it gets worse. Because countless subjects in this building get put aside, put on the back burner, put back, and then it all goes to Hades in a handbasket because we just ignore it. Now, I'm going to shut up. We got a lot of time going on, so I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. And I might add, we took some steps yesterday to help workers in Oregon.
Yes, sir.
Which I'm very proud of. Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 3392? I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3392 and open public hearing on House Bill 3393. Teresa,
thank
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3393 requires construction labor contractors to be licensed by the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor and Industries. He's also responsible for administering and enforcing licensing and regulatory requirements and adopting rules to carry out the provisions of the measure. There are exceptions for who is covered under this bill. The measure also declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you, Duke. I should have had to stay up here. Duke Shepherd and Michael Dale, please. Gentlemen, whoever wants to go first.
Mr. Chairman, I will, if it pleases
yes.
you, I would just...
Go ahead, Ray.
My statements for the last bill were just broadly aimed at the whole suite of bills you're hearing today, so I don't really have anything to add for this bill in particular.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, as you and I know from prior discussions, my background is migrant labor. And representing farm workers, field workers. And until about 3 years ago, that's what I did for about 25 years. What I was surprised to see was that I was seeing case after case after case in our new organization in construction where if you took out framing or putting up siding and put in picking strawberries, structurally, factually, the cases were almost identical to cases that I was doing in 1980 in the strawberry fields in Washington County. We have a mechanism to deal with that, and it's called the Oregon Farm Labor Contractor Registration Act. And it's been crafted over 45, 50 years through a number of legislatures. It's well thought out. It's well oiled. It is administered by MOLE. They have experienced staff that understand this community, understand how it works. It seems to me the thing to do with pure labor contractors. Now, I'm not talking about anybody that's a traditional construction contractor, anyone who has a direct relationship with the owner of the site, anyone who files a building permit, anyone who provides heavy equipment or building supplies, that sort of thing, would be exempt from this, and it would continue the same kind of regulation as it currently exists. But what we're talking about is people who are just rounding up folks, maybe providing some hand tools for labor construction sites. The key proposal in this bill is simply to incorporate them in the structure that already exists for farm and reforestation workers. The only thing that would change for existing contractors, regular sort of legitimate contractors, it would provide a service and an obligation. The service would be that there would be a licensing system under which a person could know whether when I deal with Juan or Jerry to round up some workers for me, I know this is a legitimate quality person. And I can do that by just checking the license. Then I know he's bonded. Then I know that he has taken a test, knows what the laws are, and has an interest in continuing to follow them. If the construction contractor just does that, then there would be no difference made by this bill at all. No additional liability. However, if a construction contractor knowingly uses a labor broker to recruit workers that is not licensed, then at that point they become jointly and severally liable with the labor contractor for the labor contractor's violations.
With that, again, in the interest of brevity, I'll leave it unless you have questions.
Thank you. Would this gentleman like to testify to this bill?
It's not this bill. It's the next bill.
Okay. We will get to him. Would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 3393 today? All right. Well, Mr. Daly, you may as well stay right there, man. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3393, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3397.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3397 prohibits employers from discriminating in compensation against part-time employees and employees in contingent jobs. It also prohibits a person from entering into a contract for labor or services with certain contractors when the person knows or should know that the contract does not include sufficient funds to allow the contractor to comply with laws governing labor or the services to be provided.
Thank you, Michael Dale. Vincente. Pardon me?
Anguiano.
Anguiano. Thank you very much. And Karen Grissom, please.
Mr. Chair, my name is Michael Dale. For the record, what this bill does is basically gets at the problem of irresponsible contracting out. Now, there are lots of reasons why people may want to use contract workers, and they...
Get her a chair, please. We'll get you one. There you go. Thank you. Everybody's happy. Go ahead, Mr. Dale.
There are legitimate reasons why people might want to use subcontractors, and this doesn't get at that. It merely says three things. For people that are using temp agencies, Oregon has a long-standing temp agency regulation system. The problem is it doesn't apply to hardly anyone because it's a 1950s model. It's back in the day when you used to go into a temp agency. You would pay the temp agency for a referral, and then they would refer you out to the job. Almost all temp agencies now, all that I know of now, don't charge workers. They charge the employer, and so they're completely outside of the regulatory scheme. What this would do is eliminate that exemption and say, if you are charging anyone to refer workers to temp jobs, then you're within the existing regulatory scheme, which means that you have to disclose the terms and conditions of employment. We've added that if you're dealing with workers in another language, you ought to disclose it in that language so they can understand. It has some enforcement provisions. The second thing this bill does is it says that if you employ temporary workers to do a job that you have your permanent worker doing, it's exactly the same job, the same responsibilities, then the pay needs to be the same. Now, if your permanent employee has more responsibility, if he's a lead person, if he's the one that knows how to run the thingamajig machine, that's different, and those pay differences can be justified. But if it's doing exactly the same work, same pay for the temp worker. Then the final thing this bill does is it says that if you contract out for contingent work, for temporary workers or part-time workers, if you contract out for that, and the amount you put into the contract, any reasonable business person would know, is not adequate to pay the minimum wage, pay the workers' comp, basically comply with lawful conditions, then what this bill says is that you become jointly and severally liable with the subcontractor for any wage claims or any other kind of labor claims that the workers may have against the subcontractor. In other words, legitimate subcontracting is fine, but if you're going to try to use a subcontractor as a way of shielding yourself for liability for substandard payment of wages and working conditions, then you become jointly and severally liable. And with that, unless you have questions, I'll leave it.
Go ahead, sir.
Adelante, señor.
And he has to identify himself for the record.
Señor, ¿se puede identificarse, por favor?
Okay, mi nombre es Vicente Anguiano.
Yes, my name is Vicente Anguiano.
He trabajado en una oficina de trabajo temporal.
I have worked for a temp agency.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yo vivo en Hillsboro, Oregon.
I live in Hillsboro, Oregon.
Mi trabajo está en Astoria, Oregon.
My work is located in Astoria, Oregon.
Yo trabajo hemos trabajado ahí por.
We had worked there for.
Nosotros nos presentamos en la oficina a tal hora.
We show up at the office at such time.
Nosotros tenemos que esperar a que la la empacadora hable para decir que ha llegado el barco.
But we need to be waiting for the packing plant to call us and tell us that the ship has arrived.
So, nosotros tenemos, cuando ellos llaman, nosotros agarramos un bus para transportarnos hacia Astoria.
So when that happens, we take the bus. So the company transports us to Astoria.
Nos quitan $6 diarios por transportación.
And this has a cost of $6 a day for transportation.
No nos pagan a la hora de la todo el tiempo que perdemos en esperar la llamada ni transporte.
They don't pay us for all the time that we're waiting to be called or for the transportation.
Nos pagan solamente cuando las bandas están corriendo.
They pay us only for the time when the lines are running.
Hemos esperado durante el trabajo a que llegue el otro barco más de 3 horas.
And we have waited at the job site for the next ship to arrive, sometimes more than 3 hours.
No nos pagan ese tiempo que estamos esperando.
They don't pay us for that time while we're waiting.
En el 2005.
In 2005.
Estuve trabajando en dos canerías.
I was working at two canneries at the same time.
De una pasaba a otra, así duré 4 días.
From one I would go to the other. I did this for 4 days.
Tenía aproximadamente 2 horas para poder dormir.
I had approximately about 2 hours so that I could catch some sleep.
La manager de la oficina sabía que era menor de edad.
And the managers, the office at the manager at the office, she knew I was a minor.
Había veces que si yo llevaba de comer era lo que comía, a veces no comía nada.
And there were times when if I brought anything to eat, I could have lunch. Otherwise, I didn't eat anything the whole day.
Tengo entendido que Anita, la oficina no pagó taxes, no pagó impuestos.
I understand that the temp's office didn't pay any of their taxes.
Algunos trabajadores tuvimos problemas para hacer los impuestos.
And some of us workers had problems in declaring our taxes.
Porque la oficina no los pagó.
Because the office didn't make any payments.
Ahora tengo entendido que la oficina la vendieron para pagar impuestos.
And now I understand that the business was sold so they could pay their taxes that were owed.
Y nos están diciendo que no tienen dinero para pagarnos las horas reclamadas.
And they're telling us that they cannot pay us for the hours we're claiming.
Quisiera ver si podrían.
I'd like to ask.
Ayudarnos para poder hacer algo justo para los trabajadores.
And I'd like to ask and see if you could help us so we could do something that's fair for the workers.
No.
Muchas gracias, amigo. You know, your testimony is riddled with violations of existing law. It's incredible. So, muchas gracias, amigo. I hope we can do something. But once again, there's multiple violations of the law here in this testimony already. Mm-hmm. Somehow, we have to communicate to people that they have some kind of recourse. And I don't speak Spanish. I wish I did, poquito. But somehow, we need to get that message, the minimum, get that message out there. And then take a broad look at all these things, because there's a lot going on here. Ms. Grissom, would you like to... Mr. Dale, will you please let Ms. Grissom have that chair?
Sure.
Muchas gracias, amigo.
Thank you.
Go right ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman,
Committee. I'm here in support of House Bill 3397. I am a white-collar professional. I have been in the workforce for 30 years.
Ma'am, you're going to have to identify yourself. Or,
please. I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. Don't worry about it.
My name is Karen Grissom. I have also provided written testimony that I have organized under deceptive practices, fair pay, and need for fair disclosure and retaliation. For the purpose of this testimony, I am not going to identify agencies because of the retaliation issue. Many of the staffing services, including the divisions that claim to offer permanent employment, have engaged in manipulative and deceptive practices for outrageous profit to control the labor market and establish ownership of workers. Because the workers do not pay the fee, these agencies have evaded any kind of regulation. In my written testimony, they come from 13 professional workers, all of whom are known to me in different capacities. There are no alcohol problems. There are no drug problems. These are good workers. I'm going to talk about some of my experiences. First of all, on the fair pay and the need for disclosure. I think that is really important. That has been something, discussing your wage has been absolutely prohibited. And the reason for that is because of the outrageous markup. As an example, in 1997, I had worked for an agency for 5 years in a number of different capacities, long-term assignments, making $10 an hour. I went to work doing the same job, and this was before they added the conversion fees that they don't openly disclose to workers, for $13.35 an hour plus benefits, doing the very same work. And what a difference stability and fair wages and hope of a future can make to Oregon workers. These agencies frequently advertise jobs without identifying that they are an agency. They do this in the media. They have also required the Oregon Employment Department to list them as a confidential employer, and the job seeker is required to blindly submit by fax to a known entity. Since their profit is so outrageous, that doesn't seem to me that it's fair to the workers. Another issue I have experienced is being temporarily disabled at a work site due to a poor workstation. I had addressed the issue with my agency. I was sent to a site to do one task. I was doing something else. I was keying at shoulder level 8 hours a day. I developed tendonitis. I had addressed the issue of the jobs being different. I had addressed the issue from the moment that I began to experience pain. I was under a doctor's care. I asked to be removed from that site, which many workers, in addition to myself, will tell you that requesting to be removed from a site, no matter what the situation, is suicide. After that, I was granted one more temporary assignment with this agency because I could not key because I was in a brace. I was under doctor's orders, which my agency had the information. I was sent to a site where I wouldn't have to key. The thing was, it was like a step back into the 60s. You had huge ledgers to lift and write in. I could not lift. I had to take my brace off to write. The agency looks at both of these jobs as being let go. That's what they report. That is after 6 years with that agency. I myself, and certainly others who have gotten into the cycle, which I did, and after two reorganizations from long-term employment, and in my past working years, on occasion, I had worked through a staffing service, but never for long because people were hired. Anyway, I also had family obligations, both older and younger at the time, so I was pretty well loaded with responsibility outside of work. Once you're in this cycle, it is really difficult to make, and of course the Oregon Employment Department considers staffing services a full employer, and yes, they do pay all of the employer taxes that all employers do, but they do not provide benefits, they do not provide worker protection, they do not support their workers, so having a constant flow of new meat sent their way is important. I think this bill is really good because it deals with the deceptive practices. Certainly the fair pay and fair disclosure, as an example of that, in my line of work, I did have an opportunity to know what the billing rate was for my services. And I figured out, well, I knew what I netted in a week. And we all hear that these agencies, well, they have all these taxes to pay. Well, taking a 2,000 wage and multiplying times all of the applicable employer taxes, including maximum SUTA for the state of Oregon, 2006 rates, the agencies were only clearing 90 cents less than the worker that's trying to live off of that. And when you multiply that by every head, that's pretty amazing. The other thing is people discover they have no work history. When you address issues on job sites or with your agency, who you would think, because you are their profit tool, that they would value you, but that hasn't been the worker's experience. It hasn't been my experience. I personally have been threatened twice with never working again. And I have known a period of homelessness. And fortunately for me, I knew someone. I actually resided in a rather large laundry room. And it is really a shame. I think that this bill brings things out into the open. I think it's good to have the joint employers because sometimes safety issues are a site issue. Sometimes they are an agency issue. The agencies have been working only for the employers, and what happens to the workers has not been really important. certainly the increase in homelessness. You have no job history trying to break the cycle. The worker is blamed for doing temp work. Unless you build your relationships on the site about the actual work that you're doing, you have no job history. And just as a statistic, how bad it is, this is from Arlok Sherman. He's from the Center for Budget and Policy Alternatives. Multnomah County, there is a 40% increase in people living at half of the poverty level. I myself have always been paid for the work that I've done through the agencies that I've worked for. So I don't have that issue. I have been trying to break that cycle. I do not want to go back into that. Certainly, I feel as if a number of years of my life have been stolen, my productive years. And I have been, my employment has been unstable. Well, it was working through the staffing services, but much increased, of course, since 9/11. And that is, the worker pays the price. So I think holding, having everything out in the front where a work site also knows, they know what they're being billed, but they have no idea what the worker is making, because you could never discuss that. If everything is up front, I think on some sites, they are going to be a little kinder or more accepting of the worker when they find out that, you know, maybe up to 50% of that is going to the agency. This isn't someone getting rich doing that. And I would like to address a couple of specific examples. I was sent on a referral by the Oregon Employment Department to what looked to be a real employer. And when I got there, and as I was going through the interview, I learned that you would never be a real employee because you were a staffing service employee. This company, the owner actually winters in another state and is here part of the year, so that is his reason for using staffing services. His wife had also decided that they could make even more money if they converted to using developmentally disabled people because the labor was cheaper. During the time that I was there for this interview, he headed outside to kick one of the workers' asses. needless to say, I knew that wasn't the type of place that I wanted to work. And again, by the employment department, I was required to respond to a fax number that was the same agency trying to replace at that same site. Too many deceptions, and I think this bill would really level the working field for workers and protect the agencies also when sites misrepresent. Thank you, and I certainly hope this bill will get out of committee this time.
And good luck to you. I wish you luck.
Thank you.
Believe me, I do. It's quite a story. All right, would anyone else like to testify to House Bill 3397?
Very good. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3397. Open public hearing on House Bill 3398.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3398 standardizes definitions relating to employment throughout ORS Chapter 652, which deals with wage and hour laws, Chapter 653, which deals with minimum wages and employment conditions, and Chapter 658, which deals with employment agencies, farm labor contractors, and farm worker camps.
I have Mr. Dale up here. Would Dan Charles Lidstrom please come up too? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Representative, or Chair Schaffler, what this bill does is we have a number of different definitions of employee, employer, employee in our statutes, and then we have the federal statutes on top of that, the Fair Labor Standards Act, that has a different, it has a definition that's included in some of our statutes, but not in other statutes. What this bill is an effort to do is to standardize that across these three chapters, the wage collection statute, the minimum wage statute, and the farm labor contractor and temporary agency statute, so that we use the federal standard, and there's one standard that applies whether you're dealing with federal law, state law, this law, that law, and you don't have different and inconsistent standards. And that's the purpose of this bill.
Thank you. Mr. Lidstrom?
Hello, Representative Schaefer and administration staff, Teresa. My name is Dan Lidstrom, originally from Prineville, born in Oregon in 1954. And I'll just use sound bites out of all their testimony, because my short story of last year is I had three different jobs that paid taxes and one significant one that didn't. The one that didn't and two of them that did were on the coast in Newport. I worked in seafood processing in Newport, huge number of Latinos in Newport, no question about it. We've moved them in, and nothing is being done. And the broad point I want to make is what you spoke earlier, speaking on broad immigration and work issues in the state, in the nation. I just heard this man talk about federal law, state law, this law, that law. That's what we've got going right now in Oregon and in the nation. Last year, also, when I was out of work, made a complaint to the Department of Labor in Salem, Oregon, through a phone call, spoke with a man named Gabe, but entered seven different pieces of evidence. One came right out of the Statesman Journal. The author was Gabriela Rico. The date was March 6, 2005, and it spoke of the mobile immigration coming down from Portland, Mexico Immigration Office coming down to McKay Field on a Saturday. 2,000 people showed up. The second line of that article that was written in 2005 was that they came looking for jobs, for places to live, and for driver's licenses. Okay, so that's part of the program that I'm here to testify to today. Again, last year, worked in Newport, Oregon, huge number of Latinos, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26-year-old. But I also worked with a 56-year-old Latino and a 58-year-old Latino. I'm 52 years old. So when I look at an 18-year-old, I've been paying taxes in Oregon for 34 years. I was paying taxes for 14 years before he was even born. Okay, yet when the crew bosses of any division become elected, if you're on a will call basis, which I haven't gone to work through a day labor place, but they're naturally going to call Latino workers. Okay, so I'm just saying, and it was referred a soundbite out of the seatbelt issue of farm labor vehicles, a disaster waiting to happen. That's what we've got going. I mean, here's a newspaper I picked up today downstairs, and it talks about a advocate for migrant workers' rights. He was found dead in Mexico. Now, the article says they suspect it was people not wanting an organized labor pool in America, but he's in Monterrey, Mexico. I know for a fact that in 2005, again, President Bush's home state of Texas closed the border of Laredo, Texas, and Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, because the drug gangs were using not only automatic weapons, everybody's got those.
I really appreciate it, sir. You got to speak germane to the bill, or I'm going to have to shut you off.
Yeah, all right. That's, like I say, I didn't go outside to beat anybody's ass at a day labor place.
That's
but
good.
You have got a disaster waiting to happen. And it has to do with people that are citizens of Oregon, citizens of America, versus everybody wants to save money on hiring people. If you want to save money, guess what? There's going to be a pool of labor. They're out of work in Newport. They're looking for work. They were looking for work the same time I was looking for work. So, okay, I've said enough. I wasn't on the mark for the bill, but I'm just echoing what you said. You spoke on a broad immigration and work issue status of what's going on at the southern border, wide open southern border. I just add two things to it, three dots. Wide open southern border, increasing homelessness of Americans, and a wildfire spread of methamphetamine in this nation. Illegal drugs all over, so I thank you for your time, and I'm sorry I went off the mark.
It's quite all right. Don't worry about it. I do it all the time. Look, I don't want to mislead anybody here. I don't care if you're from Mexico or Italy or Ireland or wherever. I mean, this country has China has a history of bringing in cheap labor and exploiting them. Now, I'm a hardcore union advocate. The best thing a worker can do is organize and join a union, by the way, in my humble opinion. But I'm also of the belief you don't save money in this country by paying exploitive wages, because somebody has to buy that lettuce, that Ford pickup, and that house. And when and if they can't, then there's no economy. There's no economy, nobody's getting rich. Nobody's even making a living. So I'm sticking with everything I said, but that's not aimed at any culture. It's not aimed at Mexicans or Canadians or Italians or Irish or Chinese or anybody who's come to this country because it's the best place in the world to live. So with that, does anyone else want to testify to House Bill 3398?
Representative Schaffner, since there is another minute or two, can I respond to a couple of the questions that came up very briefly?
Which questions? Whose?
Your question and Representative Holby's question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and the question came up actually on another bill, but it runs through these through all these bills, and that is the question is, isn't this illegal already? Why do we need another law? And the answer is, in most cases, it is. Some places there are gaps, and we need to close those gaps. But for the most places, it is illegal already. The problem is the structure of using labor intermediaries as the, quote, employer, without having that relationship regulated, sets up the opportunity whereby you have a guilty party who didn't pay their taxes and sold the business in order to pay the taxes and now can't respond to the workers' legitimate claims for wages. And you have the real employer who benefited from the labor who is in a position to say, not my workers, they worked over there. And all of these bills, and this one as well, are addressed to the idea of trying to get the lines hooked up so responsibility flows where it should to the people that are making decisions about cut costs, be responsible. That's what we're trying to do with this package of bills. The second thing I wanted to respond to is the question of the relationship of this to immigration, and that's kind of been an undercurrent throughout these hearings this morning. I'd like to offer the suggestion that these bills offer an opportunity to hate the slavery rather than hate the slave. The reason why this gentleman has difficulty in finding work is because we have folks that are working in situations where they're not able to join a union, where they're not able to make complaints, where they're not able to have any job security. And these bills are an effort to make it so that all workers, whether they're Irish or Mexican or Chinese or been here from the beginning of the country, have the same rights and have the ability to move forward. That's what these bills are designed to do.
And I'm here to suggest that's the only way, really, end of the day, that you're going to end the exploitation, is to put power in people's hands to be able to organize themselves, to be able to feel secure enough in their work that they can go down to the union hall, that they can make a complaint to Bully, that they can assert their rights. Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for this arrangement for these hearings.
And just for the record, no one said why do we need another law. No one said that today. I've been listening very carefully. Yes, sir.
I just want to say my complaint is not broadly against guest workers or aliens or people coming in that want to work. My complaint is, if I'm being held to the Nats wing of the law, I'm saying there are laws set up. Mm-hmm. So if I'm ever displaced out of work in my country that I was born and live in by people that are in the country illegally, something at the head has missed the first step, and now it's down to the state level. And if the state is going to do something about it, all you're doing is passing on what the federal government lost the first step on, and it went down the stairwell.
You know,
okay,
sir,
that's all I'm saying.
You're exactly right, and I appreciate your comments. Oddly enough, and this is the real paradox of all this, as wages are depressed in America, they're also depressed in Mexico. It's a weird economic phenomenon.
Greatly.
I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3398. And since I'm the only one, I'm going to stand at your call.
Thank you.